Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Well, it's all about the weather in the Midwest, the Southwest, and the Southern Hemisphere. We'll explore the range today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Our panelists today are Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing. He's in Lexington, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. Monday, USDA estimated the March 1 corn stock set an 18-year high, that's at 6.987 billion bushels. The ending Shaw stock should be up where in that 224 to 2.24 or 2.3 range. It sounds devastating on the surface, in fact, but really prices stood pretty strong for the week, remaining above the recent gaps higher. Why?
Well, I think the announcement previously by USDA of the lesser acres was the main reason, and then they're also worried about weather not allowing planting to progress, and that's kind of silly at this time of year, but the lesser acres of corn, I think, was the big factor. Yeah. And usage.
That's Pete Manhart, of course, of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing.
Well, I think a couple of things. We do have a lot of stocks on hand, but we're using them at a pretty good rate. We probably are using the sending exports out a little bit faster than what the USDA has for the annual projection. And feed probably still has to come up a little bit, too. So there isn't a lot of stocks on hand. We all know that there are, but the use is still hanging in there pretty good.
From the corn pit this week, futures finished like this. The May contract, a high of $2.44, a low at $2.35, a settlement price there at $2.36 and a quarter. They were off 6 3/4 from last week. December contract, $2.68 and a half, off 6 cents. Wheat futures finished the May contract at $3.69 and a half on the high, the low at $3.52. May wheat settled 6 1/4 higher at $3.57 and a half, and July futures at $3.71 and a quarter were up 6 1/2 cents. The May oats to round out the grains at $1.72 and a half were off a half. This week, Daryl Good wrote on Tuesday that if producers follow through with intentions to plant about 78 million acres of corn, a trend yield would likely result in a drawdown in stocks of about 950 million bushels by SEP 1 of 2007, pointing to an 06-07 marketing year average farm price of $2.35. Daryl notes any scare could push the prices higher, sharply higher, in fact, he says. Is there any reason to worry about the downside in the marketplace at all?
Oh, I think one thing that you have to look at, Todd, is what you want to put in there for a trend yield. We were doing some work this week, and we were looking at 30-year trend yields about 146 bushel per acre, but if you go to a 10-year trend yield, it's about 155 bushel per acre. So you got a lot of variation right there. The other thing is I believe the acres aren't going to be 78 million acres. I believe the market's done a lot of work since the last week of February when the survey was taken for the report. Our ratio has gone from about 2.4 beans to corn to about 2.15, I think it was the last time I looked at. So I believe the market's done its job here and brought some of those acres back in.
Do you agree with that? Has the market bought acres?
Yeah, I think the market has bought acres, and I think that you know, there's just going to be more acres planted out there unless the weather doesn't allow it.
You think those acres have been purchased here in Illinois and Iowa and Indiana, or is it on the fringe area?
Yeah, I think that it's here, and I think it's also – I think it's here more than the fringe area. People, instead of moving back to more beans, I think the fringe area still went with a lot more beans.
Speaking of beans, this is the way the numbers finish there, and we'll continue our conversation about the corn. But let's bring the beans into this. May contract at 565.5 high this week, a low at 553.25. May beans settled at 563. They were up 5 1/4 from last week. November beans at 596.25. finished 7.5 higher from last week. I want to talk just a little bit about the tech side of this market. As we talked with Dan Zwicker on Thursday afternoon, Bill, he suggested that the beans might be ready for a rally, at least technically speaking, and also that the corn, he made note, had put in an outside down week this week. What are your suggestions?
Well, it looks to me like if you look from a technical standpoint, we have that gap up after the acreage report, and that's about 8 cents. The bottom of that gap is about 8 cents lower than tonight's close, and or Thursday's close. And I think that we could probably see the market move back down to that place. But simple as it can be, I think we're in a weather market right now. And if we get delays in planting, the prices are going to go higher. If we get good planting weather and continue to see some progress, I think the prices are going to go back down to test that gap area.
Vince Reinecke of Strategic Farm Marketing joins us. Vince, do you think we're in a weather market? Is that all that's happening here?
Well, you know, I think I guess I have to indicate, Todd, that I'm in agreement basically with what was just said there. At this point, and I was just talking about this with one of my customers, if you look at a week prior, I would say the market was pretty excited because, well, the forecast looks a little wet. When are we going to get to plant? We're kind of maybe on the verge of being late already in some areas. You know, are we going to get to plant sometime soon? And now you're kind of looking at it from the other perspective, saying, okay, guys are planting. Are we going to get shut off this weekend and maybe not get back to it until the middle of next week? Or are we going to get to start again Monday or Tuesday and keep rolling with what we're doing already? And if we get to keep rolling, then I think that's probably bad news. Maybe the gap will hold us. Maybe it won't.
And the bottom line seems to me that now until the end of June, generally speaking, is a good time at which farmers usually tend to find a place to market some of their new crop corn coming out. What kind of prospects do you think, and where might they look to start marketing their corn as those rallies may appear over the next month or so?
Well, I guess I think they should have already started. We're looking at somewhere in that 60% coverage level, 30% with puts, 30% with cash sales. If they haven't got anything done at this point, I think that put where it's at today is still a good, like a 250 or a 260 December put, still a good buy. I think that's a good strategy to leave yourself open to the upside. There's nothing wrong with the cash prices to go out on today's market and get some cash sales made either.
I think he's looking at it the right way. In the last week or so, when we were above 270 on the board and we had cash up there pretty good, we had a lot of people make cash sales. And I would like to be 30 on the cash in corn. And again, 250, 260 puts for another 30, just like he was talking, and leave the upside open in case we do have a little flare up.
Yeah, again, in a weather market, you have to make the sales because the price is good, and then be ready to protect or make a sale in a manner through which you can protect. And I guess I don't really have anything different to add than what you've just heard, just simply because you've got good prices. What you need to do is sell it and recognize that if we have weather problems later on, either later on next week or later on this summer, you know, you're going to have to do something about it.
You know, it strikes me that we've talked about the carryout as a burdensome supply for, I don't know, months on end, but suddenly has it just turned around and not become a burdensome supply, or is it still that way?
Well, I think we, you know, it could be a burdensome supply if all of a sudden we really do plant more acres by a bunch and we have great weather and have a great yield. But I think the other thing we got to look at is the usage has been really tremendous, and we still have in the back of people's mind those funds that are buying corn as an energy product and holding it, and that's taking part of that $2.3 billion, I think, off the market a little bit in people's minds.
Speaking of usage,
let me add to that real quick if I could, Todd. And I think one of the things that is the toughest to do for us as analysts or farmers or just anybody in general that watches the commodity markets, whether it be corn, soybeans, or copper or anything, you know, that is to sometimes filter out the noise that gets created. And I think that, you know, sometimes people were probably talking about burdensome carryout too much. But at the same time, sometimes we forget about it too much, too. You know, we talk about, oh, funds keep buying corn, and I'm not saying that they aren't. I'm just simply saying that sometimes you talk about this or talk about that too much, and maybe that's what you shouldn't be listening to, if that makes sense.
I also believe that, and have felt this way for a long time, that it's not so much the supply. I mean, that's definitely important, but it's the direction that the supply is going. And if you project out 06, 07, 07, 08, you see those ending stocks going down. And I think that's the thing that supports the market on corn.
And they're going down because the usage continues to grow and grow and grow. And it means we have to grow a bigger crop every year. And if we do have a problem, the top will come off.
Is China an impact? And I guess I was reading from Darrell Good again this week that usage and exports to South Korea or to the Korea has gone up dramatically. And China, of course, has been their primary source to provide corn. Not the case, as the numbers say, from USDA this year.
Yeah, I mean, China has been using more than they produce for several years now, 4 or 5 years. Eventually, that's going to catch up with them. But you don't really know what they have. The best indicator over there is to look at the domestic prices, and their domestic prices are staying pretty firm on corn.
Another one on usage. Did you make note this week that I think the governors of Minnesota and California talked to Brazil about importing ethanol?
Yeah, I think there was some discussion I heard about Cargill trying to denature. You know, I heard a whole bunch of ways in which Cargill was going to try and get around the tariff and get some ethanol into this country. And like you just mentioned, too, I mean, I think the demand for ethanol is certainly there. And the question is, how quick can we in this country produce the ethanol to meet that demand? And we all know that that goes right back to how quick can we produce the corn. Well, we can produce the corn. It's just, you know, a matter of can we increase our production and the rest. And that goes right back to price. So,
from corn to beans, let's talk about this just a bit. I think it was you, Bill, that had talked about maybe a month ago about the supply in Brazil about this time of year dropping off dramatically, and that appears to be the case again this year. What are you hearing in terms of numbers?
It's not dropping off as dramatically as it did last year, for example, but it is, again, going lower. And I think on the soybeans, if you look at the bearish factors, bird flu, we haven't heard about that for a while. It seems to kind of be in the background. The Brazilian crop has probably seen its highest number. Exports seem to be coming back. We may have seen the lowest number on that. The acres probably have seen the biggest number on acres. So a lot of factors, bearish factors, were in the market. And I think that's where we're at on the soybeans.
Yeah, I think, you know, as was mentioned earlier, you know, about being due for a technical rally and the fundamental factors on beans, you know, certainly those are all in the market at this point. And are we due for a bounce? It sure seems like it in the bean market.
And the usage there, again, is still good. It's just with that big acreage number and all those other numbers now being in the background. The bird flu has come and gone several times. It's a big hot subject. It's still around. It didn't go away. It's just how much is it talked about? And it's like noise that Vince talked about earlier. Sometimes we listen too much to some noise and not enough to the other. And right now, the bearish factors are kind of in the background for beans.
Not to say that you've got to respect the fundamentals that say beans can go down to a lot lower levels. There's definitely downside risk. But one thing that I think is really important is look at that Brazilian situation. They've got a mess down there. They're getting about $3.10 to $3.30 for soybeans right now, U.S. price. Some of their land prices, I was reading some stuff over the last week, have dropped about 66% in the last 2 years. I mean, I don't know down there, but I'm sure if that happened in this country, we'd see no expansion in bean acres.
That'd be one of the things
we'd see, I think.
So. We might see a lot more than that.
Yeah, I think we'd see a lot of problems.
Oh, so on the bean side of this, did any of you hear the conversation with Bondurant last week from Commodity Week?
Yeah.
And what did you make of that? Bondurant, of course, said that he planted all beans on all of his acres this year for the first time, I think, in 30 years. John, of course, is a broker that joins us on Commodity Week as a guest from Memphis, Tennessee, from time to time. What did you think when you first heard him say it?
Well, I think we had actually been on the show and talked to him earlier, a couple of months before this last time he was on. He was indicating that he was going to do that. I mean, I think we saw that in the report. We saw the bean acres in the Delta, very little corn planted down in the southern states, and I guess it wasn't a surprise from that standpoint. But I just don't know the shift out of bean acres. I'm not as confident on that as I am probably the shift away from corn acres, but or back into corn acres, excuse me. So I don't know. I guess, Pete, what?
I think a perspective that he had also was the part about the south, the southern areas where they're planting all beans instead of corn, where corn is iffy to start with, being a biodiesel area, and we're going to be an ethanol area. And he's in the biodiesel area, so he's hot on beans. We're in the corn area, so we're more hot on the ethanol helping corn.
You know, I think it's always tough, no matter whether you farm in the south, the north, or the east, the west, or the central part of this country, it's tough to put all your eggs in one basket. I guess I would probably, from a producer standpoint, have to really question that decision. But nonetheless, it's not my decision to make. At the same time, either he's short a lot of beans or he...
He said he had all of them hedged at over $6.
Oh, okay, well, see, then that's probably why he was an advocate of being, you know, that he planted all his beans. But certainly, when the economics are right, you have to do what the economics tell you. And I think that's probably the biggest thing we can draw from that conversation is, obviously, he had done the research, and that was the decision he made based on the economics that he saw. And so when you make a decision based on the numbers that you see, then I think that's... you are making the right decision.
I think what we're really saying here is it's really kind of hard to explain this year with the acreage report because it's really probably a blip in a longer-term trend the other way. I mean, I think there's no doubt we're going to need more corn acres as we move forward long-term. You know, this year, the amount of bean acres we have, I don't know if we can maintain that.
And I guess I'll add real quick, too, I can say that, you know, from the crop insurance stuff that we do at Strategic Farm Marketing, as well as the last 10 days, you know, we've had a number of people say, well, I'm probably a little heavier on corn than I was planning on being, you know, going into 2006. And then, you know, you get the report and the price does what it does. And guys call and say, well, I'll switch another 80 or 160 or, you know, and it's been really surprising how much of a response to that end we've gotten. And maybe that's just an Illinois or a Indiana or an Iowa deal. I don't know, but it sure seems
so you're capable really of measuring the fact that acres have been bought for in the last 2 weeks.
I know they have.
I think you have to look at input costs too. If you've watched the natural gas, which is where the fertilizer costs come from, natural gas made its big highs back last November. It's half price what it was last November. Does that mean we'll have newly made anhydrous or newly made fertilizer be back to more reasonable for down the road?
Let's turn our attention to the Mercantile Exchange very quickly. The numbers finished like this. Lean hogs, April contract, 455 on the high for the week. The low at 54.55 for the high. The low at 53.55. A settlement price at 54.22.5. They were off 15 from last week. May bellies at 77.75. We're down 227.5. The live cattle finished the April contract at 81.87.5, up 65. With a high this week of 82.55, a low at $80 even, and the feeder cattle at 102.17.5, we're down 17 and a, rather up 17.5 from last week. Before the end of the trade on Thursday, the Canadian government announced that they may have another BSE positive cow. This one only 6 years old, so it comes in after the feed ban, but the market didn't seem to care really much. Have they finally gotten used to mad cow?
You know, I think that's we mentioned bird flu a little bit earlier. You know, there's always market noise, and the question is, what is it that the market wants to pay attention to on the day that the noise comes out or the news, you know, the newest round of news comes out? And, you know, I got to say that the more cases of BSE that we come up with, the more we get used to it, right? And I think that the people in this country in particular have seen the news come and go and recognize that the supply is still safe. And I'm glad that we in this country are at that point. And I think that it's just, you know, again, another news item that we'll throw in.
On the livestock side, it seems to me that the poultry folks, and if we talked when we talk on Wednesday to Terre Haute Grain, they go mostly to the southeast, to the poultry producers, that they may be in more trouble yet based on some of the consumption patterns around the globe. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I think that we still see the poultry, especially the dark meat building up in the coolers, and it's hard to get the meat exported, and we're going to continue to see that. I just wanted to say we might be a little bit careful putting too much emphasis on the Thursday's market because, you know, it closed at noon, and there probably by the time some of that stuff came out, there may not have been that much activity in the pits anyhow. So I'm kind of anxious to see what happens on Monday here in the cattle part
and
of it.
We'll find that out on Monday. In just a moment, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated about the weather.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Summer-like conditions were the big news in Illinois weather this week. Afternoon temperatures were running well above normal this week as warm west and southwesterly winds set up over the Midwest. Even the passage of a cold front early in the week didn't make much difference as temperatures climbed into the 70s behind the front. While maximum temperatures were as much as 20 degrees above average by Thursday, very dry air allowed overnight lows to reach the 30s and 40s, especially early in the week. As a result, average temperatures this week ranged from 4 to 10 degrees above normal. Precipitation through Thursday was limited to scattered showers in northern and central Illinois early Tuesday with the passage of the cold front, and again on Thursday as a warm front moved through northern Illinois. Heavier rainfall, especially for northern and central Illinois, was in the cards for the latter part of the week as a series of disturbances moved out of the plains and into the Midwest. Mild spring weather will continue into the first part of next week, but look for a turn to much cooler weather by Wednesday. The arrival of the colder air will be accompanied by a chance for showers and thunderstorms on Tuesday. Clouds and some showers will likely linger into Wednesday and probably Thursday. Sunshine should return on Friday as high pressure builds in. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Click on AM and then on Agriculture.
I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today on Commodity Week are Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, Vince Reinecke of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City joins us, where he's the senior agricultural meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon.
Thanks much for joining us. We're glad that you're with us each and every Wednesday afternoon, and we appreciate you being here for this program. Tell me what it is that we ought to be on the lookout other than in the southwestern part of the United States at the moment in the world of agricultural weather.
Actually, I really think that the biggest focus is in the United States. There's some dryness issues also up in western Canada. We also have some concern, which is just surface concern, going on in Australia just simply because the seasonal rains have not quite yet kicked in. It's still a little bit on the early side. This is getting close to the time that we start planting wheat, barley, and canola across southern Australia, and the need for rain is fairly great there, and it will increase, actually, as we move forward over the next few weeks. China is in pretty good shape right now. I don't see any big issues there. It is a little too wet in the south. This is outside of the main corn and soybean producing region, so I'm not terribly concerned about it. But there is a great deal of rapeseed that's being impacted by the wet conditions, and that may eventually create some concern there. But again, it's early. I'm not terribly worried about it for right this minute. And in Europe and the CIS, actually conditions in Europe aren't too terribly bad, but in the CIS we're still worried about the frost that's still in the ground after an extremely cold winter. It's going to be a little while longer before Russia loses all of its snow, and that frost has to come out of the ground before we can start doing any planting or creating any aggressive crop development. So we're going to watch that closely. But again, I really think the biggest issues around the world are right here in our backyard.
What are your 30- and 60-day outlooks for the Midwest, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Nebraska, Minnesota?
It certainly looks like over this next 30 days, we are going to be faced with a little bit more variety of weather than what we've been seeing. I think we'll probably see a return of a wet weather pattern when we get into the very last days of April and into the early days of May. It'll be a very similar pattern to what we saw here a week or so ago, where we get these big storms coming into the California coast, coming up through the Rocky Mountains of the northern plains and coming across the Midwest. The difference between that period of wet weather and the one that we just got through with is that the jet stream will be a little bit further north and will have warmer temperatures, which will help to create better evaporation between storm systems. It'll also help to allow the lower parts of the Midwest to see a little bit better weather. I mean, we'll see rain more often, but it's not going to be heavy in those areas. Now, for the upper Midwest, that's a whole other story. A lot of problems potentially from the Red River Valley of the north and the eastern Dakotas eastward through the Great Lakes region, probably a lot of precipitation coming up at the end of April and on into the first half, or at least the first 10 days of May. After that, I think we'll start seeing a more typical late spring, early summer type weather pattern where we start building a more persistent ridge of high pressure in the middle part of the country. And so May, I fully expect to see a much better environment for aggressive field work across the country. So we're going to have a lot of delay here in the near term in the northern parts of the Midwest, but I think the conditions will start to change when we get deeper into May.
Drew, I'd like, if you could, to give a little bit of an explanation on the La Nina situation and what that means from a Midwest standpoint. I know some of my customers, I think, get mixed up on that, and our listeners probably as well.
Yeah, I think La Nina is a little bit misunderstood sometimes. La Nina is a very important factor. Of course, just real quick review, La Nina tends to occur when we've got cooler than usual ocean temperatures in the equatorial region of the eastern Pacific Ocean. That's a lot of words there. But when we've got a La Nina, as we have had for the last few months, there's a tendency during the winter season for the dryness to dominate the central and southern Great Plains, also down across the southern portions of the country. There's a tendency for less than usual rainfall and warmer than usual temperatures. And that's pretty much what we had this winter. La Nina right now is weakening at a fairly quick pace. Sea surface temperatures this past week in the equatorial region of the Pacific have actually come down pretty close to normal. But we still have a lot of other weather features that are still saying that La Nina is with us for the time being. The expectation is that La Nina will go ahead and weaken to the point where it will dissipate, at least from a technical perspective. It'll fall below all the minimum thresholds. But we will keep a certain amount of La Nina memory, if you will, in the atmosphere as we go through late spring and early summer. So just because we lose the classification of La Nina does not mean that we will not feel the effects of the phenomenon. Now, what does it do in the summertime? It tends to lose a bit of its control over the contiguous United States during the summer season. However, there is still a bias for less than usual rainfall across portions of the Midwest. After you get beyond the latter part of spring and say the first half of June, there's still a wet weather bias that La Nina produces in late spring across the heart of the Midwest. And we've already seen that to a certain degree here in recent weeks, and that's one of the reasons why we'll see it return as we get into the early days of May. But once you get beyond the first, the first half of June, La Nina will start switching its influence to a drier one, if it's still with us. Now, like I said before, I think there'll be enough lingering memory in the atmosphere that we'll still have that drier bias still with us, and that will keep us poised for a little bit of stress as we go deeper into the summer. And there's, of course, a lot of other reasons why we're going to have dryness, too, but I guess we don't have time for that right now.
You are correct. Thanks much, Drew, for joining us.
Thank you.
Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated, out of Kansas City. A quick final word from our panelist, Bill Mayer.
I think this weekend that we're in is critical, and we're in a weather market on the corn. Watch the weather, and if we see planting progressing, corn planting progressing, then look for the markets to go lower.
Pete Manhart?
Be careful out there on your machinery, and have a good spring, and be ready to either protect prices or sell rallies.
And Vince Reinicke?
I don't think I can say it any better than what they've just said, so ditto.
That's Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.